Tereo Ererangi o Te Mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
It's time now for Green Thumbs in Canterbury, out and about with the Canterbury Horticultural Society.
Good morning, Amy. How are you going?
I'm good, thank you, Ray. How are you?
I think I'm getting on top of this virus.
This lingering lurgy.
It's very lingering. I'm hoping it means I'm over with it for the whole winter.
Don't jinx anything there.
No, don't. That's right. So what's happening in your garden? How are those 10 billion spring onions going?
Oh, they're going great. Would you like some?
I spotted them. Oh, good heavens, you'd be looking like a spring onion if you had them. I've never seen a crop like it.
They all self-seeded and I just kind of was like, well, I'll let them be and let them grow. And
they're fantastic.
They are. So I've just been digging up bundles of them, leaving the roots on and giving them to people going, here you go.
Yeah, you can bring them in the ground and they'll keep.
Well,
keep
exactly.
That's great.
Exactly. Yeah. So I have a very fine crop of spring onions and my chili peppers have been hanging on.
That's good.
I'm trying to let the fruit ripen as much as possible, some of which I want to save for seed. So.
Yeah. Well, I must admit my meagre two little chilies. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have so many chilies, I won't need to plant chilies next year. Yeah, because they crop really well, don't they?
They can do, yes.
Well, at least ones seem to. And they're steadily ripening, especially the little bird's eye ones.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm quite pleased about that because, you know, I've got some drying and some in the freezer at this stage is what I'm doing with them.
And so by the time folks listen to this, you will almost certainly have harvested them, I'm guessing.
Yes, well, we'll certainly have. I keep harvesting them as they're ripening.
Yes.
And the trouble is, well, it's not a trouble, the bird's eye one is standing to the top of the fence and it's still flowering like mad.
Oh, fantastic.
So I'm going to have a huge crop, I think.
Yeah, we were talking about overwintering it, if you could. For folks listening, if you're interested in trying to overwinter your chilli plants, if they're well established, like if they're still little babies, they probably won't last, but you can wait till they've finished dropping their leaves and cut them right back to maybe about 5 to 10 centimetres from the ground, mulch around them or otherwise cover them up so they don't get frostbitten, and just, if they're in a pot, leave them in a sheltered spot. If they're not in a pot, make sure they've got some protection around them so they don't get frosted, because if the roots get too cold, they won't survive.
Yeah. No, they won't.
But if you leave them in a relatively neutral spot over winter, they could pop back up again.
Well,
come
it's
spring.
Worth a try, isn't it?
It is.
And I guess any fruit that drops may well
self-seed. Yeah, we've definitely had that at the farm as well. We've had plenty of volunteer. We call them volunteer plants.
Oh, that's a nice term for them. Very nice.
We call them volunteers, so.
Yeah. Well, apart from having a really good crop of peppers, my beans have started, have re-established themselves, and I've got the most enormous bunches of flowers heaps of beans coming.
Oh, fantastic.
And this is just, you know, the good old Scarlet Runners. But I was so disappointed that I didn't get a continuous crop.
Yeah.
I had a big gap in the middle where I thought, it's over. And then suddenly, bang, here it is again.
Here it is again.
Yeah. So it's been a funny year.
It has a wee bit. Yeah, it has a wee bit. Yeah.
My biggest tomato was 800 grams.
Ooh. You said it was a nice beefsteak, didn't you?
It was a lovely big beefsteak. And, of course, we had too many tomatoes at that stage, so it went into my bottled passata.
Yep. It's always the way, no tomatoes and then suddenly all of the tomatoes.
All at once, that's exactly right. Yeah, so anyway. Yeah.
And yeah, I'm making a start on sowing some vegetables to to cover winter.
Yes.
And
thinking
about.
What are you sowing?
It's mostly leafy greens, things that get a bit scarce or a bit more expensive at the supermarket, stuff that I can put in pots potentially and move around.
Yes, and keep them in the sun and things like that.
So that's mostly what I'm planting at the moment.
I mean, things like the Asian greens are so good because they come so quickly.
The pak choy, for instance. Yes. I like pak choy. Mm. And so do the birds.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, birds like in all the green stuff, don't they?
They do.
Yeah. So, now, well, I'm finding now all the little finches are coming through.
They are.
And getting the seeds, the cosmos seeds and things like that. So that's great.
Yeah. Been putting out some food for them as well. Well, speaking of food, it's a very clunky segue, but speaking of food, we went and visited a mushroom farm.
Oh, so fascinating.
We did. A reef farm out in Templeton. vaguely near the Cookie Time Factory, actually, for anybody listening.
Yeah, well, just across the railway lines in a way, is so vaguely. But, of course, there's all the roadworks, so we had a really good tricky tour box of Templeton to get there.
But Paul, we spoke with Paul McKenzie, who's the owner and operator of Reef Farm. He is a very lovely man, and we had a fantastic time talking to him.
Oh, and taking photos and looking at those wonderful mushrooms.
Oh, we did. So enjoy.
Well, this morning, how are you, Amy?
I'm very good this foggy Christchurch morning.
Yes, it's lovely to be out here with Paul McKenzie from Reef Farm.
Exactly. It's been a very nice
It's a lovely
drive out.
Yes, we had to go round and around the blocks. I saw more of outside Christchurch landline than I'm used to. Out at Templeton with all that roadworks, it's amazing.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere in town, isn't it? Right. So, Paul, we were here to talk about Reef Farm. For a start, what is Reef Farm?
Reef Farm is urban farming, so bringing farming into the city and in controlled environments, growing gourmet oyster mushrooms. We're doing that for restaurants and garden markets. So it's growing inside insulated shipping containers in a controlled environment so we can grow all year round.
Yes, and wow. Haven't we seen some gorgeous mushrooms today? I must admit.
Well, I've got to say, the description doesn't necessarily give you an idea of just how gorgeous it is. Looking at the fruiting mushrooms, we just waxed lyrical about them, didn't we, Ray?
Yes, we did. And if people want to have a look at them, I think we're going to have some up on the website with Plains Media. So if you haven't actually had an opportunity, have a look. And of course, Paul, they can see them for real. Where?
So you can go to some of the restaurants that they have them. Odeon, Fifth Street, Monday Room, Tussock Hill.
Nice.
King of Snake, Hugo.
Oh, well, you are ready in
the shop. And also at the Rickard and Bush Markets on a Saturday morning, always there with freshly picked mushroom. Every morning, so
That's great. Well, that's where I first found Paul. Was at the Rickard and House Market, and you also have the dried mushrooms there and all sorts, don't you?
Yeah, lots of long shelf life product, so things that will last for years. Dried mushroom, dehydrated powders, stuff like that.
Now, how did you get into this? Because it's looks like it's been a bit of a learning curve.
Originally, I was a production manager at an engineering company. Nothing to do with mushrooms. Yeah, you know how it all starts. And I was working with people older than me. I was in charge of them, and it became quite challenging. You become a bit of a social worker, really, looking after people instead of the product you're actually building. So I thought, I've had enough of this. I'll find a new venture. I went down the rabbit hole of hydroponics and gardening. And so I started a hydroponics farm, which is growing vegetables and herbs and stuff like that. And to look after that, I thought about what can I use to enhance that gardening. And mushrooms create CO2. And CO2 you want to pump into the vegetables. So I thought I would build a mushroom farm on the side to supplement the CO2 and the heat and humidity for the vegetables. It then turned out that I didn't want to do vegetables and I stuck with mushrooms. Yeah. So,
well, of course, a lot of people did go into hydroponic lettuces in particular, didn't they? I mean, the supermarkets are full of them. So I guess a new venture was on the cards.
Yeah, it was organic, really. So the vegetables went out the window and came the mushrooms. Yeah.
Boy, did they wash.
Yeah, and it's just gone tenfold from there. So the thinking behind the whole vegetable farming and that was I have two young children and I wanted something, because it's home-based, I wanted something that the children can work in instead of going out and getting a paper run, stuff like that. And they're 9 and 11 now, and they're working in the farm, you know, an hour after school and earning some money. And that will grow as well as they they get older and need more money, then they'll be earning it.
Oh, well, that's good. And it's not as though it's child labour. It's quite nice environment to work in.
And it's also learning for them as well, because those are the kind of life skills that you can't, you know, necessarily just get casually. No, exactly. So the opportunity is amazing.
Yeah. Yep. And they, you know, we spend time together and they enjoy it. And, you know, you're learning a lot of mathematics and
chemistry,
science.
Yes, and language.
Language, yeah.
Embracing language with those mushrooms, yes.
And earning money, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, paying for their own lollies.
So we saw a bunch of the setup you're growing. How many different types of mushrooms at the moment?
I have grey oyster, pink oyster, New Zealand phoenix oyster, lion's mane, shiitake. And in winter, I will be doing enoki, and I'll look at some others as restaurants require it.
So there's a huge variety.
Yes, for all of you people out there that only know white button and portobello and some Swiss browns, there is another world of mushrooms, isn't there?
So those mushrooms you just mentioned grow on soil or in soil. These are a wood-loving mushroom. So in the forest, they grow on the side of trees, and they're very fresh, and they have a different profile. They're still earthy, but they're savoury and a nicer texture, very soft and velvety, as you see by the gills and the photos.
Yes. And how do people use them? Then how the restaurants use them, and do they retain their beautiful colours?
The pinks lose a bit of their colour when they are cooked. The others keep their colours and they keep their profile as well. It's pretty much a meat substitute. So anything you cook, you can put these mushrooms in. Anything from sautéing with garlic butter and putting on toast. Putting on your venison, doing risottos, stir fries, curries, stews, ramen, Chinese hot pot.
It's endless, isn't it? Yes. Endless, and of course they've got health benefits. Amazing.
Absolutely. So many multivitamins and minerals and amino acids. Yeah, it just goes on. I use the powdered mushroom and I sneak that into the. Like the chili con carne, and that for the children, so they eat mushroom, but they don't know it.
Well, that's quite nice too, because you know a lot of children look at mushrooms and think, but you know, with all the necessary sort of vitamins and things, it's great that you can be a bit sneaky. So, how do you do the powdered ones?
So the powdered is just being dehydrated mushroom and then ground to a powder, and that's available at the markets. And you just use that. You can make a mushroom soup, mushroom broth, or you can just add it into any stew or curry. It's almost a thickener as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like adding a powder, a flour to something, it thickens it and gives it a little bit of a different profile.
Yes, well, of course, it's like stock, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, make your own mushroom stock with it. It'd be fantastic. Yes. And you also do, not only do you dry and grind, you do dry a range of dried mushrooms.
Yeah, so anything that doesn't sell, it's still fresh and I turn it into dehydrated mushroom. So it's not like I'm using old yucky mushroom to dehydrate. It's just straight away the leftover. So dehydrate that. It's packaged and ready for sale and will last over a year on your shelf, and that's used for everything as well. You can rehydrate it in water and then put it into any of your recipes or meals, or you can rehydrate them in soups, directly into soups or stews, and that will take on that profile or that flavour of that meal. That's amazing.
Oh, I can see why restaurants love them.
They're versatile,
aren't they? There's such a huge range of things you can do with them. Well, you've got quite a setup here now. Tell us about your solar panels.
Yes, so I want ReFarm stands for regenerative farming or recycling, reinventing farming, redefining farming, all those sorts of things. And so I wanted regenerative power, and I wanted to be able to be if I could be mobile so I could have power off-grid, ideally, is the main view there. So I set all that up and built all that myself, and it creates all the power I'd require during the day.
For your mushrooms?
Correct, yeah. Because I'd like to make this, say, mobile where you could put it somewhere else. You could take it to the islands or something, and it has its own solar power control off-grid.
Any other new mushrooms you're thinking of trying?
I'm just starting in the lion's mane now, and a few restaurants are taking that on board and seeing how they can use that in their recipes, and they're really excited with it. People at the markets are learning. There's a lot of learning and teaching, so that's quite cool. And just getting people's flavor profile, or the texture profile, I guess you'd say.
That's actually a really good point because a lot of mushrooms, particularly the ones you're growing here, won't necessarily be what people expect a mushroom to not only taste like, but feel like in their mouth. And so things like lion's mane, very different again, because they're quite spongy by comparison. I mean, they're delicious, don't get me wrong. I love them soaked in a good stew or a soup. But
yeah, so with the lion's mane, if you have it in a soup or like a hot pot, when you bite into it, it releases that flavour. And it is, yeah, it has a chewy texture, but it's amazing.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
I'm pretty interested to see what happens with the colour and the shape when you do put it in a soup or something. Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, that must be what restaurants obviously would love, because they're always looking for the next new thing, isn't it?
Really? Yeah. And they're looking for produce that they can get all year round. Something they can rely on. So it's with seasonal, say like asparagus, they can use it for 2 weeks and then, you know, that's off the menu. They have to move on again. Whereas I can control the environment, so I can have it all year round through winter and summer and be reliable, always fresh product.
Yes, well, I think that's important nowadays because, you know, we are starting to worry about how we're going to feed people. So if you've got something that is so... It was probably not easy to grow, but once you know what you're doing, you can keep up the supply. But it does tend to still be a luxury item, I guess, does it?
Yeah.
I mean, I wish it wasn't a luxury item, honestly. But, I mean, there, much with anything, there's always going to be challenges. And I know that we talked about some of those while we're having a look at your wonderful setup. For you, I think cross-contamination would be a big one.
Yeah, with trichoderma and that, trying to beat the bad fungus to it. So you've got to sterilise everything really well. With all your substrates, you need to pasteurise or sterilise those. And then everything's done in a clean environment with a flow hoods where it has a laminar airflow. So you are just trying to be clean everywhere. And anything can sneak in at any time.
Oh, yeah.
And ruin your day.
Yes, right. As long as you only ruin one bag, but I imagine one bag could be 10 bags, couldn't it?
Yes, well, you're doing 16 bags at a time from the one strain, so if you muck one up, you muck 16 up, and that hurts.
Yes. Now, you also practice a total circle, right? You start with natural products, you go through the growing process, and then what happens to the stuff that's left over?
Yeah, absolutely. That's another... part of ReFarm is the regenerative. So it's all byproducts that we use, soy hulls. So it's the hulls from soybeans. Once soybeans have been used to make soy oil and all that, the hull or husk is left over. We use that, and we use sawdust, which comes in pellet form. And that's it. No chemicals, 100% organic, and just add water to that. That is then sterilized and inoculated. Once the mushrooms have inoculated and then fruited, we have what's called, I guess it's a compost. It's a used substrate, and it's sold as a compost or given to people as compost. That is high in nitrogen. It's a wood type, and people just put that in their gardens, and it adds a lot of goodness to
and all the lichen sort of soil.
Yeah. All the veggies you have in the garden, but it also pops up some more mushrooms at your gardens. It keeps on giving.
Just looking at the ones that you've just got out, the fact that you just watered, you're still getting mushrooms off about the third crop on each one. That's amazing, isn't it? I suppose that keeps your household going.
That does, yeah.
I love that it's essentially a closed loop. You've essentially got the beginning to end. And I'm guessing the water intake is not super high either, because it's not like you're having to water crops constantly, like in a traditional sense.
So the controlled environment, the humidity needs to be above 80%, but that's used by a humidifier, which is a very nice light fog. And it's using the water well, so you're not spraying or anything. It's just keeping a nice fog mist.
No, it's a really nice wee system. I have to say, I looked at it, was very jealous. Very nicely done.
Lovely, isn't it? And it's compact. You know, you're not coming spreading over miles of ground or anything like that. You've got a nice compact thing that you can organise by yourself with a wee bit of help from the rest of the families.
That team makes the dream work.
Yeah, working from home and a big cost, power's coming from the sun and light. So it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is. No, it's a really lovely setup you've got here. We're just about out of time, but did you want to say anything to finish up? Any last words, any thoughts about mushrooms or anything else, honestly?
Mushrooms are, you know, they're the closer to animals and humans than they are vegetables. They put out CO2 and they take in oxygen. So we're very close to the mycelium network ourselves, and it's just the nature's way. It's huge. But if you want to try it, come down to the Rickett and Bush markets on a Saturday and mention this and I'll give you a 20% discount. Oh, how about that? Yeah.
People like that. But... over near the coffee cart.
Yeah, I'm over by the coffee cart. So.
But what about mushroom coffee?
Oh, we can try that. Yeah. I have a few ideas in the pipeline with making my own risottos and that as a dried risotto.
I like that.
Yeah.
You don't sell kits though, do you?
I will be. Yeah. We're looking at that. Yeah.
100%. Excellent. Sign me up.
Yeah. And if you're a chef, come see me. I'm happy to... give you some free product to try in recipes.
Yeah, and if there's a special thing they'd like, you look at growing it, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Happy to chat.
And can confirm his product looks amazing, and Ray knows it's delicious.
Yes, absolutely gorgeous. It's lovely. I've had the dried mushrooms, and they're absolutely wonderful flavour, and especially the mixed ones where you make risotto or soup. Yeah. You've got a variety of different textures and flavours. It's great.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much, Paul, for showing us around and taking the time today. Really appreciate that.
Thank you very much, ladies. It's been great. I love sharing my story.
Well, thank you again to Paul for his generosity.
Oh, yes.
And the interview was fantastic. And everybody go visit him at the market.
Oh, absolutely. Go to Rickett and House Market. He'll be there with all his...
And check out what he does and has. Yes.
Yeah.
So what's coming up this... Well, next couple of months in the CHS. Well, I don't unfortunately yet have the speakers for the May Garden Life, but Garden Life will be on Tuesday the 7th at 6 p.m. and Wednesday the 8th at 1 p.m.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So have a look online for more details as we get closer.
Yeah. And it's all about flowers.
Yes, so if you're interested in a floral group, All About Flowers is a relaxed, welcoming group for anybody who loves flowers. That's the last Thursday of the month each month from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m.
And I don't think you need to worry if you don't know anything, but just interested, just go along. Yeah. There's a whole team of girls there who, ladies there, that will have got lots of ideas.
And lots of knowledge that they wish to share. Now, if it hasn't already sold out, Bulbs in Containers... 100% recommend this as a workshop to go and do. Thursday the 30th of April in the evening, 6:30 to 8:30. David Adams will be doing a hands-on workshop, so you will be planting your own bulbs.
That's right, and the bulbs planted so that you get a continuous flowering for a couple of months, don't you?
Yes, you do, well, possibly even more, depending on...
Yeah, depending.
Yeah, so thoroughly recommend that. Now...
This Margaret Watling?
We've got the Margaret Watling coming up at the start of May. And that coincides with the National Chrysanthemum Show.
Oh, yes. It's amazing. It's always amazing.
It is.
Those flowers look like little animals.
They do. They do, some of the fluffy ones. Or fireworks, actually.
Yes.
And there's heaps more workshops to find online.
Yep.
So just jump on the website and take a look.
That's right.
Things like pressed flower workshops, watercolours, composting, various ceramics. But finally, speaking of Margaret Watling, make sure you join us again on Monday the 27th of April, where we're going to be chatting with Marion Smith,
who's one
of the star presenters for our upcoming Margaret Watling demonstration.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I mean, this is a biennial thing, isn't it?
It is, yes.
And really honouring a very famous Christchurch florist was the president of the New Zealand Floral Association. So, yes, it's always a worthwhile evening.
It is. So tune in again on Monday the 27th of April to hear more about the Margaret Watling presentation and to hear from Marion Smith. But until then, that's a wrap for this program.
Absolutely.
Stay warm and happy gardening. Thanks for joining us for our Green Thumbs book reviews today.
All books reviewed on this show are available at Paper Tree, Tower Junction, your local library, or at other good Canterbury booksellers.
Make sure to get involved with the Canterbury Horticultural Society and check out what's coming up on Facebook and at chsgardens.co.nz.
And find past episodes at plains.org.nz and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Happy reading!